is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. Lots to review this week, starting with last night's vice presidential debate in Kentucky, where, by all accounts, Vice President Joe Biden at least stemmed the bleeding, right, from last week's presidential debate to performance by Barack Obama. However, in my opinion, a vice presidential challenger, Paul Ryan, definitively held his own. Both, I think, were very well prepared. The winner of the evening, again, in my opinion, ABC's Martha Raddatz, who, in full disclosure, is a good friend. We'll go over that. Maybe touch upon the now ancient history of that third Senate debate and get into some of the nitty-gritty of that compounding pharmacy here in Framingham, which is now responsible for at least 14 deaths nationwide due to that chemical screw-up in the steroid shot. All right, joining me here in Studio 3 are people who never talk, have nothing to say. Michael Goldman, a Democratic strategist and senior consultant for the Government Inside Group. Wendy Murphy, attorney and adjunct professor at New England Law Boston. And Joan Vinaki, op-ed columnist for the Boston Globe, who just came careening in at the last second here. Welcome to everybody.
Good to be
so
here.
So just general impressions last night. I mean, there's some partisans in the room, Michael. We can call you out. I know you're a Joe Biden partisan, but what were your general impressions of last night's debate?
Well, I thought both of them did what they wanted to do. I think that one of the things that Ryan wanted to do was not seem extreme, and he didn't. And so for that alone, he can call himself a winner last
night.
Except
maybe on the abortion issue.
Well, we'll go to that separately. Okay. I mean, he didn't drool. He didn't sound crazed. I mean, we're talking about a guy who experts in economics say is the most conservative vice presidential choice since 1900. And yet, one could not listen to him last night and get that sense of how different he is from anyone who preceded him. I think Joe Biden, you said you articulated it perfectly. He wanted to be aggressive. He wanted to make the case. And he particularly wanted to, as much as he could, clean up any misstatements during the debate, which made him more aggressive and maybe less likable, but I think was a better strategy than Obama's last week. So overall, I agree with you. I think both of them achieved what they wanted to achieve. I do think, I guess I disagree a little bit. I do think that clearly there were, if one listened to the debate based solely on answering the questions, every time our old friend Martha tried to nail him with a specific.
Who? Nail who?
Ryan, on specifically tell me about the budget, specifically tell me about Afghanistan, specifically tell me about your withdrawal from Iraq.
Yeah.
He did everything he could to never, ever, ever say what they were going to do. He did it well, but I thought that she did a much better job, quite frankly, than
well, she
than,
tried to nail Biden on specific.
Oh, I agree,
said
too.
He wasn't too good on either.
Well, you know, again, maybe I'm wrong, but my sense was...
So you're giving the edge to Paul Ryan?
Yeah. No, I'm giving the edge to
Biden. Okay.
But I thought Ryan did what he needed to do.
I think Joe Biden did a great job firing up his base. I'm not sure about the independents. I did find the eye rolling and the smirking and the smiling. I found it off-putting.
Off-putting.
I thought he looked like he was on Red Bull or whatever it is that
he's
drink
always
when you get
on.
It was like
why
passion.
Did you look at me when you said that?
It was like passion on steroids. He took the passion that Obama lacked. I mean, he just took it and just went wild with it.
Yeah, and also it came off as very cynical because, frankly, when you were watching Paul Ryan, if you were listening, maybe it was a different thing, but he was so reasoned and focused, and he had none of that kind of reaction on the split screen, and Joe Biden was eye-rolling and had that stupid Cheshire cat grin. It was like, what are you grinning about? And he never made it clear what he was grinning about.
Oh, I totally agree. And first, let me say I was on a plane during the debate, so I only saw
after. I was going to say, could you watch it on the plane?
No, it wasn't JetBlue.
It wasn't JetBlue, bummer.
But I did watch the news and saw some of the clips, a lot of the clips. I was, I don't know what the right word, but I felt like I was watching Ann Coulter when he grinned, because she has this terrible habit of every time she is in a debate going,
right.
For no reason.
Yeah.
And it just, it makes me nauseous.
Oh, I'm doing it. No, that was funny. Really, it was funny.
She's horrible. She's horrible. And he reminded me of her, which is
really
pretty strange.
Did you really think? I thought the smile was about.
No, it didn't work.
I thought the smile was about saying, can you believe this guy?
Had he done it once or twice?
He crossed the line.
He was contemptuous.
Every time.
He was contemptuous because he is contemptuous.
And
Obama
Martha,
was too, except he didn't work.
I know that Martha's your friend, and I know that she has a terrific reputation, and she's very smart. I thought she interrupted more from what I could tell, and again, I didn't see the entire thing. I thought she interrupted more when Ryan was speaking. What's weird is, and I agree with you about Ryan's presentation, he was clearly the boy in the room, right? And yet he was acting in a way so overtly more mature than Biden's goofiness.
You know, actually, just to depend more on that, his answers were longer and more complex than Joe Biden's were.
Yes, they were.
So I think that's one of the reasons why she interrupted. Notice she wasn't saying time or anything like that, which thank goodness she didn't do that. But she had a sense of the time. And I think overall, probably Paul Ryan spoke more. So when she interrupted, I felt like she was just moving it on.
I mean, I liked Biden's answers. I thought on substance, he really gave answers that again, the base needed to hear, and he just sort of took it to Ryan. I thought he went overboard interrupting Ryan. I thought it reached a point of rudeness. I thought it seemed rude at times. What does he think? He's on a talk show?
All right, let's play a couple.
And then when he said, oh, so now you're Jack Kennedy, that was so misplaced.
That didn't even exactly work at all.
It made no sense at all.
I think unlike Paul Ryan's comment, which, you know, when he came back and said, you know, after the 47% thing, he says, you know,
we love 100%.
Yeah, people, actually, let's hear that. This is on clip 101. This is the Gaffes one.
This is a man who gave 30% of his income to charity, more than the two of us combined. Mitt Romney's a good man. He cares about 100% of Americans in this country. And with respect to that quote, I think the vice president very well knows that sometimes the words don't come out of your mouth the right way.
But I always say what I mean.
Yeah, so that was in response to...
That was perfect.
Because Biden did bring up the 47% comment that Romney made in that video that resurfaced a few weeks ago. It's the first time we've heard it in a debate, by the way, because the president didn't bring it up. And he brought it up effectively a couple of times because Mitt Romney had essentially dismissed 47% of the electorate. So that was...
And I don't think anybody here, with all due respect to Congressman Ryan, believes that was a mistake. He was saying what he really believes. But I want to go back. It's so interesting you should pull that quote because the one thing I was calling last night by the Wall Street Journal and I for comment and I had forgotten to talk about this thing about the 30%. What's fascinating about this is you've got Mitt Romney who's trying to keep his tax rate low so he doesn't take his legitimate tax break for his charitable giving in this particular tax return. I think this could be a great opening for the Democrats to go back and say, did he give 30% in the last 3 years or 5 years? Let's take a look at that tax return. There's no question in my mind he took the maximum amount that he could have taken.
Actually,
in
he
the past.
Took more, I think, so that he would bring his... So it would come up to at least 14% of his total income because he would have been below 14%
if he had
not given more charitable.
That's my point. My point is he only gave the 30% so that he could say he was paying a
14%,
higher rate.
Which most of us pay 36% or 50%.
By the way, as my accountant has pointed out to me, the day after the election, if he loses, he can go in and amend that and grab the dough.
Right.
Even so, he's given a lot of money to charity. Yes. I don't know that that's a winning fight for the Democrats at this point. I think they are going to have to take it to him on something other than that, quite honestly.
I agree. I was just going to say, I don't think anybody cares that much about that issue anymore. I'm such a fierce nonpartisan. I'm mostly interested in questions about violence against women and children. Neither of the parties seems to give a damn, or as I sometimes put it, rape is a bipartisan male entitlement, apparently. But I do care about, and I think that they're not particularly different on a lot of issues, but this question of are we going to pay more taxes? And on that, it seems pretty clear, and I liked that about the debate, that if you vote for Obama, we are going to pay more taxes, period. We might pay some more taxes if you vote for Romney, but it's not going to be as much. To me, it's that black and white for some people.
I thought that, from that perspective, this was a really good debate, that you saw clear issue, you saw clear differences, and that it was, it was a conversational way of talking when you weren't looking at Joe Biden rolling his eyes and smirking and laughing. I mean, the actual exchanges between them I thought were really substantive, and, on issues of, tax policy and whatever, I agree with you that you saw the differences.
See, I think fundamental differences are always what debates are about. I would posit the idea, if in fact the purpose of Biden's being aggressive was to not allow the Republicans to do what Romney did, which is to obfuscate some very specific things, you cannot do what they want to do with the amount of money they're going to have left if they do all the tax cuts they say they're going to do. So, you know, Wendy, I think from some regards, I thought that Biden did a very good job of saying those numbers don't add up. And I thought Martha, quite frankly, was trying very hard to get to the point of give us specific numbers. How does this work? Tell us who says it will work.
Right. And they never have. Romney, Ryan have not yet said, well, you know, about deductions, you know, which deductions they'll, you know, eliminate or allow. They haven't really done the math. They just
and
keep
the
on saying
deduction.
That it will work. It
the
will work.
Right.
Here's a little bit of the Biden-Ryan tangle over taxes and growth last night.
You can cut tax rates by 20% and still preserve these important preferences for middle-class taxpayers.
Not mathematically possible.
It is mathematically possible. It's been done before. It's precisely what we're proposing.
It has never been done before.
It's been done a couple of times, actually.
It has never been
done Jack Kennedy
before.
Lowered tax rates, increased growth. Ronald Reagan.
Now you're Jack Kennedy.
Ronald Reagan.
Of that course, was your tax, right. Jack Kennedy thing that didn't
right.
work
yeah.
out.
Of course, Jack Kennedy, when he did it, the tax rate, the highest tax rate was 54%. We don't have any tax rate that's even close to that amount now to generate the amount of money that
Kennedy's people forget.
Of,
yeah,
of course.
Right.
Well, you know, he is the math genius when you know, he benefits, I think, and one can certainly take from the way he talks about math stuff that he has a lot of confidence. So even though he wasn't specific, he comes across as very confident that the numbers will work. And, you know, he isn't being specific about the deductions because I think it's bad for them to talk with specifics. Otherwise, he would have. But I have to say one thing about the 47%, speaking of numbers. When I hear people talk about how horrible that was for Romney to say, I wish that he would have come back and said, look, what I'm saying is 47% of people are going to vote for Obama. And that happens to include a lot of people, perhaps not all 47%, but a lot of people who are going to vote for him because he's going to keep giving them money for doing nothing. That's what
that
I wanted.
That is what he said.
No, but he, but
that
no, he said all 47%. We're gonna get the quid pro quo.
When you say Wendy,
he's not right.
I know,
on that.
I know.
But the fact is, there are people who will vote for Obama simply because they want money for nothing, and that's something that
see,
I think the Republicans should talk more about.
Did they vote for Bush for the same reason? Because he gave as many people
it's a
something
quid
for nothing.
Pro quo.
I never understand that argument.
We'll give you citizenship in exchange for your vote. We'll give you money in exchange for your vote. That kind of quid pro quo vote strategies offends me.
But it depends on the meaning of money for nothing. I mean, what are you talking about? Unemployment if you're out of a job? I mean, what exactly are you talking about?
No, I'm talking about not bothering to try to get a job because you're lazy and your government is handing you a check. I have relatives who fit this definition. Relatives of mine who shamelessly say, I'm voting for Obama because I want more money and I don't feel like working.
I never heard anybody say that, ever. But the truth is the vast majority of that 47%.
Of mine. Call them out. Who are they?
Oh, jeez.
Get them on the show.
At the holidays.
Allow them to defend themselves. I don't believe that.
And I do want to make very clear about the 47%. The reality is among that 40%, huge swaths of that are people getting Medicare, which they worked for, Social Security, which they put in for, Medicare, Medicaid, which they worked for, unemployment insurance, every single person who's getting a check who's a disabled veteran. So
and a lot of millionaires
left?
Will vote
by
for
way,
Obama, too. I'm not saying that.
What
I'm just
percentage
saying that
of the 47% don't work?
Soliciting of votes in a cash for vote, I hate that about my country. I hate it. Well, and by the way, I'm not saying the Republicans don't do it in the other direction.
You act like the Republicans don't
they
do it.
They do, and I wrote a piece about this for the Patriot Ledger. I said the Republicans do it at the other end of the spectrum. It's something I find disdainful about democracy in this country, and no one seems to care. No one seems to care.
I think you vote for the person who answers three fundamental questions, Wendy. Does the candidate understand, care about me, and what will they do for me, meaning my family, my community, my country? If that somehow it translates into buying a vote, I just, again, we can agree.
All right, let's go back to the substance, because I thought the very first question was spot on. Of course, it's an area of expertise for Martha Raddatz, but it was about what happened with Libya and the embassy security.
We should not be imposing these devastating defense cuts, because what that does when we equivocate on our values, when we show that we're cutting our own defense, it makes us more weak. It projects weakness, and when we look weak, our adversaries are much more willing to test us. They're more brazen in their attacks, and our allies are less willing to
trust us. With all due respect, that's a bunch of malarkey.
And why is that so?
Because not a single thing he said is accurate. First of all,
be specific.
I will be very specific. Number one, this lecture on embassy security. The congressman here cut embassy security in his budget by $300 million below what we asked for.
That was the best line of the whole debate.
It was right.
That was a winner for Biden.
I didn't know that either.
Absolutely. Yeah. But then, you know, Biden, I think, you know, looked weak or wrong when he said that they had no advance notice that yeah. they needed security. So that was not a winner for Biden. Yeah. That was a winner for Ryan.
If you could, if you go back, the truth is when events take place and you try to deal with a 24-hour cycle and the pressure to get information out, you're going to get it wrong. I mean, what we know now about, for example, the 1982 Lebanon bombing of the is so different than what we thought at the time. I mean, it's history has turned on its head. How could you possibly
know?
Yeah,
I thought Biden handled that answer pretty well, you know, about how but you reported what you knew at the time.
But do you really believe that the Obama administration has been totally honest and candid about what happened?
No,
in that
I don't think they ever
I think there's another shoe there.
I don't, but I
Michael,
don't think they ever.
You?
No, I said no. I don't think that you ever. But I do think, in fairness,
it was a CIA outpost, and they're not saying that.
Right. Exactly. You know, I mean,
is
listen,
that true?
We lied about the.
That's what my guess
yeah.
is.
You know, and remember what Ryan said.
That guy, Glenn Doherty, was definitely CIA. Right.
Yeah.
And what Biden wouldn't say, and I wanted him to say it so badly, is, you know, he wasn't in the embassy. Even if we had had a military contingent at the embassy, they were in the safe house because that's where they did the business. You don't have troops there for the very reason that it's the place that you're doing your real business. Remember, they spent more time burning documents than they did trying to get out and save their lives. And that is, I think, Emily,
but this
you're
is pretty.
Right.
This is pretty bad timing for the Obama administration to be perceived as having lied about the role of the video in all of this because, you know, assume there's a
They didn't know.
Well, assuming there's a legitimate tactical reason for overstating the significance of the video, it comes across as sneaky and, you know, then you say, I can't trust my president and I'm going to vote for it. That's what the problem.
Well, I think they
it
got bad
like
intel.
Cover.
Someone told them that that was the reason
correct.
For the rioting and which turned out to not be right.
And if Emily is correct, and I believe you are, if Emily is correct, I believe you
it's
are,
like the weapons
and he's
of mass
a CIA, you can't say he's a CIA.
It was a CIA
guy,
outpost.
Dope,
talking to Michael Goldman, Democratic strategist, Wendy Murphy, attorney and adjunct professor at New England Law Boston, and Joan Vinaki, op-ed columnist for the Boston Globe. I don't have the soundbite, but when Martha asked, Martha Raddatz asked each of them to be very specific about their religion and their feelings about abortion. I thought both of them handled it quite well. I mean, they're both Roman Catholic. Paul Ryan said that he basically could not abide by any law, these are my words, not his, that didn't embrace his tenets. Whereas Joe Biden said, I will follow my tenets of religion and I oppose abortion personally, but I can't put I can't force my tenets or my beliefs on other people. And you know.
I think they both gave excellent answers on that one. And I mean, it's just one of those issues that you're on one side or the other. They articulated it in a very personal way. And I thought
what's going to happen,
well.
John, because you've written about this recently with Mitt Romney, because he's wavered on his position on abortion. I mean, last night, you know, this ominous cloud of, Roe versus Wade's going to be overturned if Mitt Romney is elected and puts two new people on the Supreme Court. Is that a possibility even?
Well, I think Mitt Romney's problem isn't so much about where he stands on abortion, because he stood virtually everywhere on it. It's about, trust with him, and it just sort of has come to symbolize his, lack of core and conviction. He could not answer that question the way Paul Ryan did. He couldn't answer with that much, genuineness and authenticity, because he's just, taken too many sides on it.
I think Roe versus Wade is never going to be overturned, and it has nothing to do with the way the politicians talk about it. It's that if they did overturn it, women would suddenly become very important politically and powerful, and it would really piss off both parties.
But if they've pledged to appoint a justice, that does put it on the table.
Well, but then I think justices also start to think politically about the ramifications of their rulings, which is why Roberts did what he did on health care. I think it's interesting the way Romney said recently, I can't support a law that would support abortion, because really that is his code for, but you're damn right, I'm going to put a Supreme Court justice up there that will vote against it. I just don't think ultimately that the Supreme Court will go there. They've had too many chances.
Who's going to bring it up? Who's going to file it?
Well, that's another thing.
But
no, you can create a strategically create a test case and get it through the federal court system and get it up there, and you know, for the right political reasons, it'll always land there. But I think the question is, because they had a chance, and I think it was, I forget the name of the case off the top of my head, but they had a chance with the right. If you just think about who, you know, whether it was a Republican appointee or a Democrat appointee, they had a chance a few years ago to overturn it, and they didn't, and it didn't line up neatly along ideological lines. And I think that's an interesting, observation about the nature of the Supreme Court.
I just totally disagree. I've got 2 points.
With
and
both
then
of
I
us?
No, with Wendy.
Okay.
I think we have seen in one of the least publicized political and substance stories of the last 100 years, we've seen the Supreme Court take 300 years of stare decisis on the Second Amendment and turn it on its head. Literally 300 years of it's a militia, is not an individual. And this court came in. Now, it happens to be, this is where Wendy and I agree, on that issue, most Americans happen to agree with the court on it, so there wasn't the upset. I think that there's absolutely no question in my mind that Roe v. Wade would be overturned. And I also agree, Wendy, that the response is going to be, as you said. The thing that I thought most interesting, and I'd really like to hear your take on this because I'm not Catholic, it always bothers me, it always seems nonsensical to me, that no one ever does the follow-up question. If you feel passionately as for religious reasons on choice, on abortion, then the Catholic Church is equally passionate, if not more passionate, on the issue of the death penalty. The Pope weighs in every mm-hmm. single time on that issue. You never hear somebody say, well, are you going to try to do, create a law because of your religious beliefs?
That's against the death penalty.
Because most people in this country favor the death penalty. So if you're going to be consistent, Ryan should have said, and by the way, if religion is my main focus as an elected official and following my religious beliefs, I've got to end the death penalty.
The federal
absolutely.
I just don't think that people are as passionate about the death penalty, or the Catholic Church isn't as passionate politically about the death penalty as it is about abortion. And that's just the way it is.
So or assisted suicide in the case of Massachusetts, because Cardinal O'Malley is, trying to get people.
What
to
did
vote
you think
about
that? If I might, I just that was very interesting. I wonder what people thought about the cardinal tweeting about the assisted suicide ballot question. Which
with all due respect, and maybe I don't mean that, he has no credibility whatsoever on the issue.
Joni, I mean, I just.
I'm not all that high on tweeting, so I think I'll take him to
test. He said he was going to be tweeting not just then, but every day aggressively, trying to get out to constituents.
I don't tweet either, and I don't ever intend
to. That's beside the point.
But what I'm saying is, so I don't have strong feelings about who does or doesn't do it.
No, it's about the issue, not tweeting.
So assisted suicide, I think raises a lot of questions that are religious in nature, and if you think we shouldn't be edged toward death more quickly, you should vote your conscience on that. My feeling is it's always about money. This is about money, and insurance companies want to save money by killing people sooner than later. That's how I feel, and I don't think
Wendy,
it's religious at all. It's just an excuse to side with a certain
this
position.
This law may not be perfect, but I mean, my basic theory about this is that people are already doing this. It's called the privacy of the hospital room with physicians and nurses and ethicists and everybody else, and you decide what to do with a dying loved one.
But Emily, wait, that's fine, right? Putting it in law.
No, I just said this law may not be.
It's a very different animal than we all agree.
But
we'd rather die than suffer.
It's not backed by the insurance companies.
Do you really think it's about insurance?
It's about money.
I don't.
Come on.
See, and what's really interesting about
helps
this subject.
Helps Obamacare's numbers.
I couldn't
that is
disagree
painful.
More. I got to just say that what's interesting about this is I have choice on huge things except when it comes. I can put my dog to sleep so he won't suffer, but not my mother. To me. But what's, again, fascinating, if I have a problem with this law, Emily, I think it makes it too difficult to implement the damn thing. I think they put so many obstacles in play that to get there, you have to literally, figure out whether was it 3 months before you're going to die?
The weakest argument is the religious one. Yeah. I mean, go ahead and have your religious objections, but that's probably is the weakest argument against it because there are so many other, caveats in there,
I don't think it has to do with
money. And it could trip up a system that works perfectly well, frankly.
We already have enough, I think.
We do.
In place in terms of if you write your living will and, you get to a stage where you don't want life-sustaining measures. I think putting in writing that human life doesn't matter as much as it used to is dangerous. And I'm not religious at all. This is not a religious feeling. It's a philosophical observation that we already treat each other like crap. We don't want to be putting laws in place that say life isn't worth it. Boom, there goes grandma.
I'm not that high on this whole assisted suicide thing, but I don't think that it's about money.
No, I don't either.
And I think reasonable people can disagree.
As the oldest person in this room, I'm 100% in favor of this. I think just the opposite. I think that we don't treat people with dignity, particularly when they get old and ill. We hide a reality, which is, whether we like it or not, I have to live to be 126 for this to be middle age for me, you know? And I ain't going to make it, so I'm way past middle age. And just allowing me and my religious beliefs and to have that option,
you give your family living will options. They can make decisions for you that will effectively end your life.
Yep.
In this case, you know, this is triggered by a doctor telling you only have 6 months to live. Right. I think that's
and
the trigger.
Have to do
so
twice.
It's like a very specific
kind of
thing.
Oh my God, they're making.
Let's see. Where do you stand on legalization? Those were in local issues. Legalization of medical marijuana.
Well, to me, this is the easiest
one. Talk about
one.
Camel's nose.
I know
under
we're
going to
really disagree with this one, but I will just tell you that when I was sick, as you guys know, many years ago, they were giving me Demerol, which is an amazing drug, and they could give me morphine, which is an amazing drug. Things that can addict you, but if you're having if you have breast cancer and you have nausea, a doctor can't write a prescription for nausea, but he can give you Demerol, or he can give you OxyContin. I just think this is it's insane. It is just our fear of marijuana is just insane.
I'm conservative on this one. I'm opposed.
I'm totally opposed, and it's not a fear of marijuana. I mean, that is so not the issue. Look at what's happening in California.
Yeah.
You know, you have no reason medically for marijuana. You go to Dr. Nutjob, and they write you a script, and you get baked for the rest of your life. Yeah. How is that a productive
80% of the
society?
People in California who are getting these prescriptions
have
are 32-year-old
no
white male,
right.
You know, smoking joints.
But here,
joints.
The law that we're talking about here doesn't do that. It's
no,
a totally different one. But you just made the point about women. If 60% of the legislature were female and not male, or if prostate cancer, the nausea for prostate cancer could be treated the way it is for certain women with breast cancer, this would have been changed a long time ago. We're talking about nausea. And it
no,
seems
it's not just
to me,
nausea. It's for spasms.
Well, spasms,
ALS,
anxiety,
mental anguish,
toenail hangings.
Women are the biggest beneficiary of
drugs.
This.
I really don't.
We don't need drugs. We need consciousness. We need to be present. We need to be less drunk,
plus,
less
it's
baked.
Really a facade for the legalized marijuana movement. I mean, it's funny.
Absolutely.
It's got $1 million in funding, the local ballot.
The only argument, by the way, that I've
nothing.
Heard that sounds reasonable to me comes from my son, who's a proponent of the law. And he is all about taking money out of organized crime. And when he makes that argument to me, I'm drawn to it. That is a really solid argument, that it is a way decriminalize some of the worst behavior that's associated with the underground
sales. The general rule on ballot questions is this. You can never go wrong with no.
I don't
need any more laws.
Yeah,
That's my rule in life.
I hope that people follow their heart in both of those cases.
The legislature ignores ballot questions at will anyway now, don't they? I mean,
yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter whether we vote them in anyway. It was that one, Joan, that we all voted for and to save clean elections or whatever it was. Rolling back the income tax. Well, no, they paid no attention to that one. Talking to Michael Goldman, who's a Democratic strategist, Wendy Murphy, attorney and adjunct professor at New England Law Boston, and Joan Vinaki, op-ed columnist for the Boston Globe. So before we move on to thumbs up, thumbs down, like the drug crime lab story, the drug lab story, I was sort of slow to get kind of hopped up about this meningitis, you know, compounding pharmacy thing. But this is actually pretty outrageous. I've only used a compounding pharmacy once, and I actually didn't even know they existed. I didn't even know what it was for. So I had like this eye itch or something, and so I had to go to this compounding pharmacy out in Needham, and it was like, and it's a sterile environment. You walk in, there's not a thing anywhere on a shelf in a compounding. There's no drugs on a shelf. You know, you come up to a counter and you say, "Yeah, I got this prescription," and it takes like 4 days. They got to mail it to you in the mail. It's like this. Anyway, so I didn't even know what they were, but they make individual prescriptions so it's no mass produced stuff. So I know Congressman Markey now wants to put this not laws in place, which once again, I think we don't need another law. That's already the law, that you're supposed to do these individual packaging for clients. But apparently this Framingham Compounding Pharmacy was making these steroid injections in mass amounts and got some.
Because other states allow you to do that. They weren't selling it here, I guess, from what I read this morning in the Globe.
Oh, but they're selling it in the rest of the world. Everybody else died, but not our
citizens. That's why nobody here has got it, because they weren't doing it there.
Is this a criminal charge, though? Wendy, do you think it's a criminal event?
Well, it could be. You know, the definition of manslaughter is recklessness that leads to death. And if they can prove that there was recklessness associated with the causing the, you know, the problem, that's a possibility. It's a pretty high standard. I think it's much more likely this will be a bunch of civil suits, and those will be easy to prove. You know, I do think that if you don't understand compounding pharmacies and if you have never had a need for steroid injections, it's hard to identify with the risk here. But, you know, lots of people have back pain. Lots of people do get these injections. And I do think it gives us cause for anxiety, much like the Tylenol scare some years ago. Whether or not you take Tylenol, you suddenly feel afraid to go to the doctor or afraid to ask for anything at all, not just in the compounding pharmacies. But, you know, what if this fungus went further? Fungus is so dangerous. In terms of the immune system and how difficult it is to fight, people die a lot from fungal infections, and it's not something we read a lot about.
What I think is really interesting about this is that the same agency, the State Department of Public Health, which was in charge of the drug lab, was also in charge of this. And I think it is ultimately going to raise questions about oversight.
Yeah.
And was the state doing its job? And I think the answer is probably no. Maybe for budget reasons, maybe for a whole host of reasons, but it puts the spotlight back on the DPH. And I think the spotlight eventually gets to Governor Deval Patrick, who
in both cases
is in charge, and the buck should stop with him.
Well, what's scariest about this is it was really alluded to by both Emily and Wendy, and that is, I get steroid injections for my arthritic spine. Mm-hmm. I can get it as many as 3 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And this last one I took actually has held for a full year. I haven't needed one. The point is, I had no idea that it was a compound until this. So I was taking something that I assumed was a fairly normal.
Sure, just pull it off the shelf.
Exactly. and that's what's been most interesting to me is I never heard of these companies.
No.
And it's a pretty big industry there. They gave Brown a ton of dough, and they were advocating there in Washington. But that's what I find most amusing is you
never
actually knew about it, and I never
had. They made me go to this drugstore way out in Needham. So why do I have to go to Needham to get this? Well,
this
it's
one
a
in
compounding.
Cambridge, too. Yeah, they're very rare. What I want to know is, because I haven't read all the stories carefully enough, has somebody proved that it was only in the steroids? Because I'm thinking there's a lot of compounding that goes on there. Should be asking.
But something that gets injected directly into your spine versus like putting it on your eye or something, it's probably a little bit more.
I think fungus is dangerous no matter where it goes, if it gets inside your body.
All right, talking to Wendy Murphy, Joan Vinaki, and Michael Goldman. We're going to take a break when we come back. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Other people, places, and issues in the news. I'm Emily Rooney. You're listening to Boston Public Radio. This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. It's time once again for Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down, where we ask our panelists for quick takes on news events large and small from the week. Our panelists today are Wendy Murphy, attorney and adjunct professor at New England Law Boston, Joan Vinaki, op-ed columnist for the Boston Globe, and Democratic strategist Michael Goldman. Ladies and gentlemen, get your thumbs ready. All right, continuing on our political theme that we started earlier today. Number one, thumbs up, thumbs down. Where is that? Oh, the Martha Raddatz dust-up over the fact that President Obama, attended her 1991 wedding to Julius Genachowski. She's now divorced from him. Was that a real issue or ginned-up controversy?
Thumbs down. The business of politics and the media, relationships that people have, friendships that you have, it doesn't mean a reporter doesn't kick you where you're in a bad place when they need to. You just have to understand that there's a fundamental difference between your relationship personally and their job.
Plus, it wasn't a debate with Obama. It was
ridiculous. It was a stupid story. And again, if you know the people you work with, and you're friendlier with some than others. And I just found that it's like saying that because someone's a conservative and I'm a liberal, that I can't. Charlie Manning and I have been friends forever. I mean, to say that I can't go to his Christmas party because of ideology is stupid.
I thought it was manufactured, and it was really just strategic, just trying to, sort of put her on edge,
right,
and make sure that she asked a tough question of Biden. But I don't think she needed that to do it.
No.
So,
boy, did she ever.
Wendy?
I'm fairly friendly with a number of judges that are, obviously, that I've worked with in my career as a lawyer. And some of them who came to my wedding, I still appear in front of. And what they do is they say
really?
Out loud.
Conflict.
Yeah. Well, they say out loud, I want you to know I went to Wendy's wedding, or, I've had dinner with her in the past. Are you okay with it? And then the other side says, fine. And they don't favor me, but they say it out loud because that's the right thing to do, to reveal your possible bias. And I think that would have been a good idea.
So I think you're giving
it a thumbs
down.
She was still married to the guy.
She probably forgot.
I mean, 19.
You know what? You're absolutely right. I guarantee you. She didn't have a clue.
She didn't think about it. All right, thumbs down. Thumbs up, thumbs down, Joan. Should Mayor Menino be taking a 2-week vacation to Italy in the middle of the election season, leaving poor Elizabeth Warren to fight it out on all her own?
I'm going to be on Menino's side on this, or maybe on Angela's side.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Warren's got to fight her own fight. If she needs Tom Menino to direct, he'll be there on election day, and that's when it matters. He'll fire up his machine, and that's what she needs. So I'm with Menino on this.
Absolutely, thumbs up. We should all be going to Italy. I love it there.
We got a clean sweep. I he's not running for anything. He's just a supporter. If he was leaving in the middle of a mayoral race, I think he got a question. But this is I don't get it.
All right, Wendy, here's one for you. Mm. I know this isn't women, but it's dogs. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Should Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Michael Vick be allowed to own a dog? Of course, he went to jail for that whole dog fighting thing a couple years ago.
You know, the notion that Michael Vick went to jail for, 18 months?
Yeah,
and that
while.
Somebody's going to go to jail for cutting a knob off a tree?
Yeah,
and every time
that's death penalty stuff.
Look, every time somebody rapes or beats the hell out of a woman, they don't even get arrested. I am up to my, right here with disgust the way our criminal justice system thinks doing bad things to animals is a more serious crime than beating the hell out of a raping
woman. So wait, you think thumbs up he should be allowed to own a dog?
He should. I wouldn't have even arrested him the first time around. And
what?
It isn't that I think we should let animals kill each other. What I'm saying is that you have to put things in perspective. What he did got ginned up, in my opinion, because of the political power of animal rights activists. Most football players do much worse things and never, ever, ever get in trouble. I don't understand all the brouhaha. I really don't. I'm sorry.
I'm rolling my eyes like Joe Biden here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm a dog lover.
That obviously.
but, I mean, having said that, I don't think we now have the right to say he should never own a dog.
No,
I mean, he did his time. He did the crime. He did his time. But I do think he should have gone to jail for what he did.
As the grandfather of Humphrey the Wonder Dog, I'm going to split the baby here. I think that absolutely he should be allowed to have a dog because he did his time. I mean, I don't think that you say for the rest of your life unless that's part of your plea. On the other hand, I also agree that we do have a problem with people with certain radical elements of the animal industry, which I think are very scary, particularly when it comes to medicines that you need to test before you go to humans. So
Also, in his case, I think it was beyond just the dog fighting. It was the illegal gambling.
Of course, it was
the
whole, everything.
That was really the driving force behind him getting in trouble, which says a lot.
All right, here's another one for you, Wendy. Thumbs up, thumbs down. On The Price is Right, finally using male models. Barker's Beauties got a little more diverse this week when Rob Wilson, he's a Boston native, got hired on the show for the first time in, 50 years?
Well, the thing, and Barker got in trouble for sexual harassment of all those beauties he had.
I believe that, too.
Absolutely. After the 10th one. I should say, the thing I should say out loud is objectification is bad for women and bad for men. But what I really want to say is, I thought this guy they showed that got the job, he looked good naked to me. And I'm happy to have eye candy for girls. I really love
thumbs
the
up,
fact
that, is.
That
right,
this
Joe?
Is happening in a cross-gender way.
I'm fine with it. Thumbs up.
I'm just thrilled that after Scott Brown wins this race, he has a place to go to work.
After he loses it, you mean?
After he loses this race.
That's true.
All right, moving along. Thumbs up, thumbs down. On Jack Welch quitting his job, walking off in a huff. From Fortune and Reuters, he wrote a couple of occasional columns and blogs for them. He was upset because he had been criticized by them for saying it was a conspiracy, last Friday's jobs numbers were a conspiracy theory, that they were ginned up by the Obama administration. Thumbs up, thumbs down on Jack Welch for storming off the job.
I'll go first on this one. He is a serious guy. And for him to lower himself to say something which he cannot prove and isn't true just feeds into the worth of what Wendy was talking about before, the sense that we have that everything is fixed in the government and the statistics. I mean, they are what they are. Sometimes they favor you. Sometimes it's like the polling that you've talked about before. The Republicans complained about the polling until the polling started going well. Now they love polls. So I think good riddance to him. Good
riddance.
Goodbye. And I have to say, I don't like people who act like babies. Don't quit. Just suck it up and be a guy. Right. On the other hand, it's absolutely true that jobs numbers are fairly easy to manipulate. You tweak the definition of are you searching or are you not searching? Oh, please. The notion that we don't tweak things to produce numbers to advantage one side or the other right before an election.
That's true, but not the Labor Department.
Hey, mission accomplished for Jack Welch. You know, he got attention, which is what it was all about. You know, and it's another sign of, you know, social media. He tweeted it. And,
but it was very uncomplimentary. They talk about, you know, denigrating.
He ended up at the Wall Street Journal. Not so bad.
Yeah, talking about, there was a lot of ageism comments there, too. All right, here's a couple of fun ones on clothing. Thumbs up, thumbs down, Michael. Should Boston be ashamed? Philadelphia has been crowned the sweat clothes capital of the U.S., how is that possible when everybody dresses in sweat clothes here?
Yeah, I think that once again we see the manipulation of the media by the thugs in Philadelphia.
Thumbs down. We wear more sweatshirts.
I tell you, all you have to do is leave here, go to a mall, and stand for 15 minutes.
What you got to do is walk out the door of the studio.
I'm not sure about sweatpants, but we have more baseball caps, I think.
Oh, God.
No, and pajama bottoms.
Oh, that's the worst.
That's my favorite. No, I'm all about comfort, man. I wear extra large men's sweaters and the loosest pants I can find unless I have to be somewhere fancy.
This is when I know I'm old. I will never get used to seeing people wearing pajama bottoms in public.
I don't understand it. A couple of them go by here quite regularly, right by the studio window. I don't get it. All right, we've got time for just a few more here. Let's see, thumbs up, thumbs down on the Nobel Committee. Here's a good one for you, Joan. Giving the entire European Union a Nobel Peace Prize. What? Well, this is like, you know, going to a soccer game and everybody gets a prize. What?
I think it's another sign of the devaluation of the Nobel Peace Prize as when they gave it to Obama way too soon. So
crazy.
Thumbs down.
Thumbs down.
You know, I don't have strong feelings about it one way or the other. It's sort of like giving everybody a cooperation prize, which I guess there's value in that. And, you know, we should be, well, maybe the point is to get people to be more nice to each other.
And I will say this to you, my bitterness is that I came in second.
All right, here we go. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Are you going to watch Australian Felix Baumgartner Sunday when he tries to break a world skydiving record by jumping from the edge of space? His jump was canceled Tuesday. It's now scheduled for Sunday.
Thumbs down. I think it's terrible. It's you know, like a suicide watch in a way. Not assisted suicide either. Or maybe so.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, I don't watch any of these things.
Yeah, I'm not a rubbernecker, and I'd likely close my eyes if it got gory.
You know this talks about the cultural difference in our country right now. As someone who virtually never watches anything that has a reality tag to it, I am always stunned at the number of people who I know and admire who do. And I just don't get it. Why would you want to watch this? I mean, I just don't. I don't even understand what the purpose of this is, other than to say I did it. I just don't.
All right, we have a
football.
Final thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yep.
Thumbs up, thumbs down, Joan. Have you turned your heat on yet?
Yes.
Oh, what a wimp.
I don't think I ever turned mine off. I have no blood. I'm always cold.
I have not turned it on yet. That's a great. And I just noticed because I pay on a monthly bill, and I realize how much money I've got stored away for this year because I haven't turned it on at all yet.
No, thumbs down. I haven't turned it on. So I gotta tell you all this. I sent Martha Raddatz a note this morning telling her how good she did last night. And she just sent me one back. She says, "You're the best. Thank you. I'm just so glad it's over. But I do love this little video. Apparently somebody put together BuzzFeed. You guys can catch it on BuzzFeed. Martha Raddatz, badass super moderator. I love it. So she sent me the link. I'll have to watch that right after the show.
Didn't you think she did great?
She was fabulous.
She was great.
She was smarter than either one of them.
She was a lot better than, I think maybe Gregory she and he are the best of the ones I've seen so far.
All right. Wendy Murphy, Joan Vinaki, Michael Goldman. Thank you guys so much. I've lost my pages, but I can see that Edgar Herwick III is back in the studio.
I am, and I agree. Thumbs up on Martha Raddatz last night. She was great. All right, so Emily, I know you've got to have reels and reels of Super 8 movies, 8mm stuff somewhere stashed
away. Not so much anymore. Really? I did transfer a lot of that stuff over.
All right, well, that's good. We're going to find out why you should dig those up, why we should all dig those up. Right now, there's something really cool coming up where you're going to be having a chance to screen your own home movies for people in our own community. Pretty cool, right?
Okay, can't wait.
All right, so that's Emily Rooney. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III, and you're listening to Boston Public Radio.